This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kohatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. A violent killing in Tulsa, Oklahoma, of a Lebanese-American man is being labeled a hate crime. 37-year-old Khalid Jabara was gunned down by his white neighbor, a man named Stanley Vernon Majors, who had harassed his Arab neighbors for years and referred to them as, quote, filthy Lebanese. The killing came just days after an imam and his assistant were fatally shot in Queens, New York, in an incident that members of the Muslim community there see as linked to Donald Trump's Islamophobic hate speech. In France, Islamophobia has also reared its head, this time once more in the form of a bizarre ban on bathing suits worn by Muslim women, a fashionable invention called the burkini. Several French towns have banned the full-body suits that invoke the look of a scuba diving suit, but for some reason are seen as threatening to French values of secularism. My guest is Zahra Bilou. She is a community organizer, a civil rights lawyer, and director of the Council of American Islamic Relations in San Francisco. Welcome to the program, Zahra.
Thank you so much for having me, Sonali. It's a pleasure.
So first, let's talk about the horrific killings here in the United States before we go to the story of what's happening in France. The story in particular of Khalid Jabara seems to be a very clear-cut case of race-based hatred because of this particular man's obsession with the Arabness of his neighbors. What's remarkable about the story is that there were many signs pointing to his violence. The family tried to warn the police and the police did nothing. Is that something that we really need to pay attention to?
It's frightening because, as you said, there were warning signs. His family said they were living in fear, and yet still nothing could be done to prevent what eventually happened. Some have compared this to what happened in Chapel Hill, North Carolina last year. Many are talking about the fact that this was a Christian man. And so it sadly evidences that Islamophobia impacts all of us. And then in a time when people are managing tensions about their relationships with police, the fact here that the family says that the police knew what was going on and still it escalated in this way doesn't help.
Right. A man apparently nearly ran over Khalid Jabara's mother when he was taken in by police custody. He was released soon after, and then it was found that he was armed, after which he is now in custody for the suspected killing of Khalid Jabara. What about this coming just days after the killings of the imam and his assistant in Queens? That incident was not clear initially who did the killing, but people in Queens immediately pointed to, or some people at least said, you know, this is the world we live in today with the kind of anti-Muslim speech that Donald Trump promotes. Is that a fair connection to make?
People are living on edge. And so immediately when news of the imam and his assistant being killed in New York spread in the community, that was a concern that they had, was what's going on? Is this the result of the increased Islamophobia? I think we have yet to wait and see what happens in New York. But for me, it reminds me that people are afraid, that unfortunately hate violence has led to killings prior and still again in Oklahoma. And so it's a difficult time, and the rhetoric of our elected officials and politicians is toxic and frightening.
And a man in that particular incident has been charged. A suspect named Oscar Morrell has actually been charged. But interestingly, in this case, a person of color himself, not clear exactly what his ethnicity is. He might be African American. It's not clear whether, so far at least, whether authorities are going to classify it as a hate crime. But these things aren't always black and white, are they, Zahra?
True. That's true in so many ways. Even when we're talking about young kids, for example, if there is bias-based bullying happening, it's not just Caucasian students that are doing that. So in that same way, hate crimes aren't things that just Caucasian adults do. They happen between different minority groups. They happen sometimes within groups when we're talking about sexual orientation. And so we want to be clear to not profile only white suspects as committing hate crimes, but also not jump to conclusions before we know more. At the same time, this question of does it get charged as a hate crime or not is an interesting one. Someone could be motivated by hate, but there may not be enough evidence to bring a hate crimes charge. And in that case, any charge is appreciated and welcomed. But still, many community organizations, including our own, are always asking that these crimes be investigated as hate crimes, that law enforcement invest resources into assessing whether or not someone's protected class status, here their religion, was what motivated the crime or not. Because that's what gives us a sense of how bad the environment is, how to protect against future crimes, and how to advise people to stay safe.
And we should also note that it's actually quite unusually rare to have a conviction or even a charge based on hate crime, because it's notoriously difficult to prove. You basically, you know, even in instances where a person straight up comes out and says, I hate this person because they're a certain, you know, part of a certain community, and then kill them, it's very difficult to actually prove that in court.
Agreed. I mean, it's got to be, in many cases, a explicit thing. Sometimes someone's background or priors or involvement in, you know, in certain hate groups may help. But like with employment discrimination, with hate crimes, some people are going to commit a crime because they're motivated by hate, but maybe not be explicit about it. And so in that case, it can be very difficult to prove that hate was itself the motivation.
And I should also mention that in mid-August, an Indian man of Sikh origin was killed at a convenience store in Arizona, invoking one of the first crimes against people of color after the September 11th attacks. There was a similar attack at a convenience store of a Sikh man back then. And Sikhs have often also been victimized because, of course, bigots are idiots and
yes,
can't tell the difference between Muslims and Sikhs. How do you put these particular violent and fatally violent attacks into a national context, Zahra? I know CARE keeps close account of Islamophobic attacks as well as hate crimes, that whole spectrum of crime, if you will. Are we seeing a trend go in the disturbing direction?
Sadly, we are. In 2015, there were more attacks on Muslim organizations and places of worship, as well as those that are sometimes mistaken for Muslim organizations, as you mentioned, in 2015 than we had in any other year prior. And in the 2 weeks following the Paris attacks last fall, we saw more hate crimes and hate incidents against individuals, again, who are Muslim or mistaken for Muslim, than in any other two-week period since 9/11. So it was worse at the end of last year than it was at the end of 2001. It got really intense in November and December of last year and has leveled off since then. But what we're concerned about now is that it's become normal, that it has become socially acceptable to spread anti-Muslim hate. Some of the things that our politicians are saying today, whether it's presidential candidates talking about banning Islam and Muslims, or local candidates doing things like issuing ISIS hunting permits, this is not rhetoric that we had seen even just a few years prior. And so what it does, we worry, is that it emboldens those who might be sitting at home in their hate to go out and take action. It angers them, it pushes them over the edge. And so regardless of who wins, what I'm worried about is what has become normal in our country. And then a related piece is the underreporting. When we say that things were really bad in 2015, we're also considering the fact that many people never actually called for help. I still anecdotally will meet individuals who know me in the community, who trust me and support our work at CARE, for example, but didn't think that what they experienced was serious enough to call for help or to have it documented. And so those people remain uncounted.
Wow. And of course, another related issue is the easy availability of guns in the United States, which when mixed with racist hatred makes a very fatal outcome, as we've seen in the cases we've just discussed, all three cases we discussed, victims of a shooting. Let's turn to France. Now, France has been the target of some very violent attacks just in the last couple of years, very high-profile attacks by groups claiming to be Islamic, and by groups that one would characterize often as fundamentalist, and by a group like the Islamic State, whose primary victims are Muslims in other countries. But France has responded, unfortunately, in a way that seems to be invoking Donald Trump. This burkini ban is just so bizarre. I'm just so fascinated by the story. I can't stop reading about it. Essentially, French secular values are seen as, particular bathing suit that is a full body bathing suit is seen as antithetical to French values of secularism. What do you make of this this bathing suit, by the way? I mean, it looks pretty fashionable to me.
I have a couple of burkinis, and they have changed my relationship with beaches and swimming pools, because now I can comfortably and modestly enjoy water activities. Whereas prior, it was a question of like, what do I wear? Is it the right fabric? Where do I find it? Burkinis have really made a difference for a lot of people, Muslim and otherwise, who want to enjoy water activities, but maybe don't want every inch of their body on public display. For me, it's about a woman's choice as to what she shows and doesn't show of her body. And so in the same way that many of us as Americans or Westerners might take issue with countries that require women to cover, as an American, I also take issue with countries that prevent women from covering.
This is essentially, France is requiring women to uncover themselves.
Right. I mean, and it's not surprising coming from France, right? This is a country that does still have a limited hijab ban in place. Yeah. I remember when that conversation began more than a decade ago. And so it's not surprising. It's unfortunate. And it's like they have blinders on and are so offended by people forcing women to cover that they're forcing women to uncover.
You know, the French Prime Minister, Emmanuel Valls, had made such a bizarre comment. He has joined in with the right-wing anti-Muslim groups in France, saying that the burkini is a kind of symbol of women's enslavement. However, what you just pointed out to me was that it sounds like it's freed up a lot of Muslim women to enjoy the beach. There's images of Muslim women surfing wearing a burkini. How is it any different from the full body scuba diving suits that we see so many surfers wearing?
Agreed. And this also, again, for me, goes to the blinders, right? Like the choice of whether or not to get a bikini wax or shave my legs is also one of enslavement, right? Am I enslaved to this idea that I must present my body in a certain way, that it must always be on display, that it must be perfect, and so on, right? We talk so often about the eating disorders and body dysmorphia and other things that young women experience because of the social pressures on them. And so for me, a burkini is incredibly freeing, not just because I don't have to worry about which fabrics are water safe, but also because I don't have to worry about feeling like I'm on public display when I just want to go out and enjoy a day in the water.
Right. I mean, going to the beach shouldn't have to be about bearing one's body. It should have to be about enjoying the beach. But somehow the French authorities are seeing the display of the burkini as provocative to, I suppose, non-Muslim French because of the recent attacks in France. I mean, how do you respond to that? Are they trying to ban burkinis or are they trying to ban Muslims?
It's absurd, right? One of the problems that we've seen in the U.S. is baseless security restrictions targeting Muslims because who knows what weapons they might sneak into their clothing. I think this takes it to a whole other level of absurdity. It's not even security. It's, oh, your clothing might offend me because I don't get to see enough of your skin, right? These are the types of restrictions and perspectives that we're seeing coming out of Europe that are detrimentally impacting interfaith relations, integration of recent immigrants, and so on. How do we convince people that this is not a religious fight, that this is not about Muslims versus the West, which I agree it is not, when there are these absurd restrictions being put into place that have no consequence on the safety, security, or actual values and freedoms of the French people or any of us.
The burkini is seen as a symbol of Islam. However, we found a photo of the British TV star Nigella Lawson wearing one. I can imagine a lot of people who might be worried about sun exposure, you know, using a burkini to protect their skin from skin cancer. I mean, I'm sure the stores that sell these pieces of clothing do not restrict their sales to Muslim women.
Correct. And I mean, I've bought mine in the United States. And so it's not even that they're not, that they're necessarily being bought in the Middle East. It's that they're being bought here also.
And incidentally, they were invented by an Australian Muslim woman. How do we sort of start to view these things with a rational framework, especially between now and November, Zahra? I mean, we're seeing, you know, the kind of horrific rhetoric that Donald Trump is, of course, espousing, but then we see that reflected all over the country. We see other politicians in other countries expressing it, espousing it. And it has such dangerous consequences on the ground, not just for Muslims, but for anybody who might be perceived as Muslim, and in general for all Americans.
Right. I find hope in our allies, in our friends, and so many others who have reached out and been supportive. I don't think that the majority of Americans or French people or others are Islamophobic. I think, unfortunately, we have a small, loud, vocal, organized, and resourced group of anti-Muslim activists. And that's true for our traditional anti-Muslim activists, but also for politicians like Donald Trump and others, for example, in French leadership. Just a couple of weeks ago, California proclaimed August as Muslim Appreciation Month. And then the city of San Jose, the 10th largest city in the country, followed suit. And it wasn't controversial here at all. Like, yes, there have been people from other places who have sent hate messages, but all of our elected officials got it right in California on these issues. And so I'm hopeful that with small steps like that, and important demonstrations of solidarity and support, that we will get through this.
Zahra, I want to thank you so much for the work that you do and for helping us navigate these issues. Thanks so much.
Thank you for having me.
Zahra Bello is a community organizer and civil rights lawyer. She's the director of CARE San Francisco. CARE stands for the Council on American Islamic Relations. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can watch all of the interviews that we are doing on our show, as well as leave comments on them.